morning, Atlanta. It is 9 a.m. on September 5th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by the World Trade Center Atlanta here on Business Radio X, where we are a proud member of 2012 Central Atlanta Progress. And to learn more about them, you can go to atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
I have a lot to say in the morning when we get started.
It's very exciting.
It's kind of a mouthful.
It's so good to see you.
It is good to see you.
We have got a packed show.
We really do.
It's very exciting.
We're going to jump right in today. We normally do our little news updates and we chit-chat about the weekend. And I have some stuff I wanted to get off my chest. But you know what? We'll put it all on hold and we'll talk to our fabulous guests because we literally have not an empty chair in the place.
Yep, absolutely. So Amir Faroki is here. He's the executive director of Georgia Forward, and also Kate Atwood, who's the executive director of the Arby's Foundation. And they're going to talk to us about Georgia Forward, the upcoming Georgia Forward forum. We also have Rick Warnicki in the studio, who is Vice President of International Brokerage with Ackerman and Company, and he's going to talk to us all about commercial real estate and international investment. So, guys, welcome to the show. We're so glad you could be here this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning, Elizabeth.
All right, so let's start with Amir. Tell us about Georgia Forward. We actually had a great update last week, and everybody's all jazzed now and want to hear more about it.
Excellent.
So you guys are gearing up.
We are. Each year, we host a big statewide conference called our Georgia Forward Forum. It's next week, September 12th and 13th, up in Athens at the Classic Center. And I guess I should explain for listeners who may not have heard our board chair, A.J. Robinson, last week. We are a 501c3 nonprofit that works to really tackle the problem of the two Georgias, which for a long time has been described as Metro Atlanta and the rest of the state. But you ask people, and people will say there's five Georgias, there's 10 Georgias. So what we really try and do is bring together a really diverse mix of government, business, civil society from across the state to look at emerging trends, where the state's going, and how we can be more successful as an entire state, not just regionally or locally.
It's almost like we're a victim of our own success because Georgia's been so successful with economic development. We have so many different pockets and now need to unify those pockets.
Well, we talked a lot about it last week, too, just in the sense that geographically it's so different. People in Atlanta certainly have different perspectives than people in Savannah or Macon or out in the country somewhere. So bringing it all together into one conference has got to be really interesting.
Yeah, it's we found, though, there's a lot of shared interests and aspirations. You know, when you have a university president sitting next to a peach farmer, sitting next to an elected official, sitting next to a CEO, the conversations that happen are really unique and dynamic, but you also find that people have a lot of the same shared interests. And, you know, one thing I think the people in Atlanta, we tend to fail is that we don't really pay attention to the rest of the state. You know, we go to Hartsfield, Jackson, and fly to wherever we want for vacation, and we don't think about Albany or Augusta.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't we the center of the universe? I thought. Am I wrong? I'm sorry.
This is the problem of the two Georgias.
Darn it.
Yes. Thanks,
okay.
Dana.
Sure. Happy
now,
to help.
Kate, what about you? How's Arby's Foundation involved in Georgia Forward this
Yes,
year?
Well, we're really excited to come on board this year as a sponsor, and we're really focused. The Arby's Foundation is focused on ending childhood hunger in America as a system, as a chain, a fast food chain restaurant across the nation. But being headquartered in Atlanta, we've really want to make sure that Georgia is looking at this issue and paying attention to this issue. 700,000 children in the state don't know where their next meal will come from. And I think we can all agree that in the United States, where food is aplenty and we're the wealthiest nation, there's just no reason for that. It's absurd. But it's about bringing a spotlight on this issue. And we're very, very fortunate to participate this year in Georgia Forward and it be one of those main tracks. I mean, this is our nation's future. This is our state's future. This impacts education, all things that surround our kids. So it is high time that we really pay attention. And the good thing about childhood hunger is that, especially in the United States, there are systems and there are programs in place. So there is a solution, but it does take exactly what Georgia Forward is doing. It takes bringing a collaborative, all the stakeholders in the state together to make sure that the programs are available, there's access, there's education, and the infrastructure of these kids getting the meals they need to grow and thrive is available.
So what does hold, if there is a system that people have, you know, implemented and it works on some level, what are the barriers that hold a whole community back from achieving that end goal?
Yeah, I think always a good example of a program that works is our, you know, free and reduced lunch program that is served in our schools. There are 20 million kids in the nation that, you know, use that program. But when you think about those schools being the anchor of that meal being served, what happens when the kids are out of school? So what happens at breakfast? What happens at supper? And what happens in the summer? 20 million kids get that meal during the school year. Under 3 million get that same meal in the summer. Although free summer meals exist. So it's really up to us to almost, you know, in a marketing sense, connect these kids and their families to the meals and the programs of which our federal government provides the funding for, that are administered on the state level. That's where the state comes really into play. You know, again, how let's, you know, really make sure that those, you know, those wheels are turning and that they're, the infrastructure is working.
Absolutely. Very important conversations. Now, transportation has also been a big theme here in Atlanta and Georgia this year. Is that going to be on the agenda, Amir?
It is. I'll take a step back and tell you what the goal of the conference is. You know, if Atlanta gets something and Macon doesn't, Macon gets upset, or if Columbus gets something and Augusta doesn't, Augusta gets upset. And part of the problem we have in Georgia, we have a zero-sum mentality about economic development and how we're going to grow as a state. When there's a lot of other states that do a much better job kind of leveraging everyone's strengths to find statewide prosperity. So the conversation we're having that the Arby's Foundation fits perfectly into is this question about how do we reach statewide prosperity? So no matter where you are in the state, your area is thriving, and it may look different from something 100 miles away. In that conversation, we're having a very robust set of panels on ending childhood hunger that Arby's is part of. We're also having a conversation on what's after the T-SPLOST that has really left the state in the lurch on transportation. We have some regions of the state, 3 of the 12 passed their T-SPLOST and the other 9 didn't. What does this mean? What does this mean we're going to have some regions of the state that are really investing heavily in infrastructure and others that aren't? Where is the state going to pick up the slack? Is there a role for a statewide plan that maybe some people say should have been there in place in front of the T-SPLOST? So there's a lot of unanswered questions, and we're going to have a robust conversation on that, as well as on healthcare as an economic engine, how our cities can be more creative in defining themselves.
Now, since this is a business talk radio show, we always like to bring it back to business. And some of these issues, while they're important social issues, sometimes you don't see the direct link, but I know there is one, to the economic prosperity. So talk a little bit about the business context, maybe even the ripple effect that some of these issues, if left unchecked, can have on the economic prosperity of the country or the community here in Georgia.
Let's talk about childhood hunger. I think Georgia has grown over the last 30, 40 years largely on Metro Atlanta's growth. And that growth has come primarily from people who have moved here from somewhere else. And that growth has stagnated a bit the last 10 years or so. And so we start to see our own shortcomings. And when you look around Georgia, whether it's public education or childhood hunger, these are issues that are going to determine whether we have a competitive workforce over the next 10, 20, 30 years, if we're going to be growing businesses here, or we're going to have to try and get folks to relocate here to drive our economy. So it's, and I think Kate can speak to this, but you know, if our kids aren't healthy and they're not sharp of mind and ready to learn, it hurts our economic competitiveness.
Absolutely. From my perspective, and I think why Arby's, you know, it being a strategic business move to end childhood hunger, which was a bold statement for a QSR, for fast food. But, you know, one of the things I really respect is as a company, and as a corporate citizen, we really took that man in the mirror approach in looking at, okay, if we want to better the world, better our nation, what can we first do to improve our own selves? And we launched a healthy kids meal. So we are able to provide access and stand behind this vision that all kids in America deserve access to a healthy meal, whether you're a consumer in an Arby's restaurant or you're out there receiving one of our grant monies. So we really, really feel like we can only be a catalyst for our nation's youth and the future of our nation. I mean, that, you know, it is education, but education, you know, if a child goes to school hungry and isn't able to pay attention, is sick more often, you know, they will not learn and thrive. Hunger is actually one of the top six reasons that youth fail in school. So it is an important issue for our nation's future. It affects every aspect in terms of business and just the prosperity of Georgia,
you know,
and the United States.
It is kind of amazing because I think people who have don't think about often those who don't, and not because they're, you know, cruel or mean or anything like that. I think you just get busy in your own life and your own world, and you send your kids to school full and with snacks, and you don't think about the other kids that are sitting there hungry. And I know when I'm hungry, just like because I didn't eat my granola bar, I'm grouchy and I'm not paying attention. In fact, I didn't listen to what any of you people said just now. No, I'm kidding. I did.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there really is something to that. I mean, when we think about how we get just in an afternoon of being a little bit hungry because we didn't get our afternoon snack or our Starbucks or whatever, when you think about a kid who's going through life hungry every day, what that does to them on all levels, psychologically,
yeah,
emotionally, intellectually, it's really incredible.
Well, and I think the hardest thing about this mission is, you know, the other side of this conversation is the obesity issue.
Right.
And when you put, you know, what you can see is obesity, what you cannot see is hunger.
Right.
You know, so I, you know, when I first got in this work and I was having lunch with a group of kids who were being served a free summer meal, I was talking to a young girl and having a conversation. I could tell she was fatigued. I thought she was 8 years old and she was 13.
Wow.
But if I would have seen her walking down the street, I would have just thought she was an 8 year old.
Right.
You know, and that's why these programs, us as the adults in the room and the community, have got to be loud and clear that this exists, that it's a growing problem, but it's one that we can solve if we work together in a collaborative effort, private and public partnerships, you know, stakeholders from every community. And the other thing that is so important at the state level is just what, you know, Dana, what you said opening up is we're just, every state's very different, you know, just the geographic layout, you know, rural versus urban. I mean, there's so many different obstacles that are unique to Georgia. So we have to focus on it at that state level.
Well, I also think the obesity and hunger issues are interesting to put hand in hand, because in a way, I think part of the problem is what is available to a lot of lower income families is not good for you.
Right.
And so you do eat, you're eating, you know, fast food all the time and without a healthy option. And instead of having apples for a snack, you're having French fries for a snack because they're 39 cents on special or whatever, you know. And the same thing at the grocery store. I mean, the stuff that's, you know, attractive to kids and, you know, looks yummy and whatever is full of sugar and high fructose corn syrup and all kinds of stuff that makes you fat. So you kind of almost have a choice of being starving or being fat in this country,
right,
really.
Yeah, and one of the conversations, one of the panels we have under the Ending Childhood Hunger track is how do we get, you know, healthy Georgia-grown food into our classrooms and into the mouths of Georgia's youth. And, you know, one of the, I guess, paradoxes of Georgia is that agriculture is our biggest economic sector.
Yeah.
It's doing, you know, if there's rain, it's doing amazing. And there's farmers who are shipping pecans and peanuts to China. They can't grow it fast enough. And there's a lot of new organic farms in South Georgia. But that food is not making its way into kids who need that food. And so I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation about how do we bridge that gap for food that's grown here, that's locally grown, to get that to kids who need it.
Yeah, very interesting. I think that I kind of would like to be there. I'm not sure I can make it that day. But while we're on that subject of making it there that day to Georgia Forward, talk about that. Who's there? How do you get there if you want to go there? Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it's September 12th and 13th, which is next Wednesday and Thursday in Athens at the Classic Center. You can learn more at georgiaforward.org. We, you know, have an open-door policy. We try really hard to get a really dynamic mix of leaders in the room, whether that's from, you know, universities, businesses, elected officials, nonprofits, foundations, and neighborhood activists as well. So we'll have a lot of students there from UGA. But if you want to register, you can go to georgiaforward.org, where we have one-day passes and two-day passes. We also have a number of keynote speakers coming in from around the country to give us some unique perspectives on things, and then some robust conversations that will happen with folks in the room. But again, the focus is on statewide prosperity. If we're going to look back 20 years from now, and we're the most prosperous state from corner to corner in the nation, how did we get there? What do we have to do to get there? That's going to be the framework that we're working under.
Very cool.
Excellent. And Kate, Arby's Foundation will, of course, be there representing. Mm-hmm. Any other information we should know, or if people want to find out more about Arby's Foundation?
Yes, you can go to arbysfoundation.org, and you can also stop by any Arby's and donate a dollar to End Childhood Hunger the month of September. So I encourage everybody, if you want to join the fight with us, that's another opportunity to do so.
Excellent. Nice. And I do love me some Arby's, I'm not going to lie.
I know.
And if you
craving a roast beef
there
sandwich
there may or may
now.
Not be some Arby's giveaways.
So there may or may not. It's a little bit of a mystery. Yeah. We like that. We like a mystery here.
That's excellent. Well, thanks, guys, so much for coming into the studio. Tell us. Have a great event. I really look forward to seeing all of what comes out of these productive conversations.
Yeah, we talked briefly with AJ last week about what comes out of it and what happens with the results of all these great conversations. And so I know we'd love to have you guys or AJ or all of you back on to sort of talk about the aftermath, sure. What the conversations led to, you know, where the interesting ideas came from and where they're all going. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully we'll see you guys again in the next couple of weeks.
We'd love to come back, and we'll put out a big report coming out of the forum that collects everything that's thought up and proposed.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you again so much for being here.
Awesome. So Rick, you're up.
And go.
No transition, no segue.
Right. We should probably go back and remind the listeners, you know, who he is and what he's doing here, and you know,
Rick,
what it's all about.
Warnicki.
Warnicki.
Warnicki. You're an engineer from Cornell University.
That's
Rick.
Right.
Moved to Atlanta in 1979. So you've seen a lot of the economic development that's happened over the years that we're kind of referencing.
That's what we're all about.
I knew we had something in common. Cornell, go Big Red.
Go Big Red.
You go.
Sorry.
Except this week we say Roll Tide where Daddy went. So.
Oh, well, never mind then. Moving on. So I thought we were going to be friends, but we're not, apparently.
30 years of real estate and industrial support experience, and now you're a chemical and environmental engineer, renowned for commercial real estate engineering. So tell me a little bit about this path here and how you've gotten here.
Well, the critical thing, I think, is how I got involved in being the vice president of international brokerage with Ackerman & Company, and you know, how that's happening in Atlanta. It's just a natural progression. You know, contrary to a lot of the southern stereotypes, Atlanta has grown consistently for 30 years because it's just constantly reinvented itself for what's coming on the horizon. It reacted to bad things that happened in town, like crime, very effectively, but mostly it became one of the largest convention cities, brought in the Democratic Convention, brought in the Final Four, and a lot of that came from real estate development over the years. Charlie Ackerman and I have done the same thing in our own careers. I started out in heavy industrial manufacturing. Frankly, there's just not a lot of that in the South, so the engineering and environmental then got used for commercial real estate development and transactions, taking down the old building with the asbestos and building the new state-of-the-art whatever. Charlie did the same thing exclusively with commercial real estate up to the time when he built Tower Place at 1 million square feet. A lot of people thought that was just way too big for Atlanta, would never be occupied. And, of course, now there's a dozen buildings that are 1 million square feet in Atlanta, and there's constant growth around them. So
now, that's understandable. I mean, there has been obviously a ton of growth here in Atlanta, but how did an engineer get into Ackerman as a broker? And then how did you get in charge of international from there?
Well, the direct connection is when I had my engineering company, I did work for Ackerman, or we serviced their investment and development needs. Ackerman remains an absolutely first-class outfit with, you know, excellent customer service, and that's the playing field I like to play in. When I was, you know, sold my interest in my engineering company a few years ago, which, by the way, we kind of saw the end coming, and that was a critical change for us, as when I got my broker's license. And when I got my broker's license, I went to Ackerman for some advice, and they brought me on. What they were very interested in is my long-term relationships with international. Even though I wasn't directly a broker, I'd always worked with commercial real estate. I'd always worked with the international community. And Ackerman's very well known throughout the Southeast, but they wanted to go beyond those borders. And so I brought in experience from when I worked in Africa as a kid, a lot of experience with the British over the years. And as Atlanta grew, you know, we've got the Germans, we've got the Asians, we've got The Polish are very big and active right now, et cetera. And a lot of that has been below the radar until the economy slipped, and now that's coming up. You know, while our economy might seem to be in shambles here now, internationally, Atlanta, Georgia, in the southeast is still a very attractive market and a very attractive place to invest, and we want to assist with that.
What are the types of people that are looking to make investments in the Atlanta market now?
Well, I mentioned it a little bit. Georgia. The British are still the largest investors in Georgia, and it's funny because it actually goes back to the Revolution. Georgia was a British colony. When we won the Revolution, we didn't seize any property. So Georgia always has had a British base, and they've invested.
Now, I never knew that.
If you come forward 250 years, we've got a wonderful consul general in the form of Annabel Malins. British UK trade and investment is here now. Last year, or actually 2010, Mayor Reid and actually Governor Deal both went to England to court business there, and that trip resulted in British Airways cargo facilities being moved to Atlanta. And that means jobs and that means investment. That's good for everybody. Now the activity is a lot with the Germans and the Europeans and Latin America have always invested and been prominent around Atlanta. Now it's the Polish and the Russians and the Eastern Europeans who are starting to make significant moves. Everybody who's been up to Gwinnett knows there's a strong Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese presence up there. And then Brazil and South America are the next emerging economy. And one of the things I laugh about in Ackerman is there's 49 of the guys who divide up Atlanta and Georgia, and then I take the rest of the world with all these guys.
Nice.
So that must be really interesting, working with all of these people from all over the world. You've probably learned a lot about culture and just the international.
You know, from a business standpoint, you hit the nail on the head. It's actually understanding the cultures. People ask me how I can speak so many languages. And see, I've learned how to say hello to the pretty girls and the businessmen and say hello and order a drink and get a taxi cab in about 30 different languages. But when it comes to the thickness of a concrete floor and how it's going to support steel shelving, that's a little bit more difficult.
Right. That's a specialized conversation.
And we work a lot with manufacturers. So then you get into film thickness and you get into the, you know, viscosity of fluids and on. And see, this is where my engineering comes in. I understand their products. I understand the manufacturing process. From the engineering and real estate in Atlanta for so many years, I understand transportation and logistics. You don't want to put the plastics firm in Sandy Springs, and you don't want to put the headquarters down in McDonough. Working with the international community, I employ an army of interns who assist me with translation, and a lot of those kids are out of Georgia Tech and Georgia State and other great universities we've got around the South. Georgia State in particular has a phenomenal international program. But working with the people, that's something that comes over time. Working with India is different than working with China, is different than working with Korea, is different than working with Poland. And that's something that just comes with time, working with those cultures.
Now, obviously, the international investment, like you said, has been going on for a long time. So why is there such an intense focus right now at Ackerman and the growth in this area?
Ackerman, and by the way, my focus and Ackerman's actually hasn't shifted. We've supported the international community. Now, separately, I'm relatively new with Ackerman. That's a year-old relationship. But I've worked with the international community since I was in college. Ackerman has done most of the premier real estate rollout in Atlanta for over almost 50 years now. And a lot of that investment in real estate has been from the international community. It's just been under the radar. What makes the newspaper is Tower Place is being built. Rarely they talk a lot in detail about the people who put money into that transaction. And I'm not familiar on Tower Place, but I know many of the larger projects in the last 10 or 15 years have a lot of international money with them.
Now, let me ask you something. Do you think that's because the investors don't want to be talked about, or is it because it's just not interesting news, or why doesn't that make the headlines more?
Dana, it's a little bit of both. A lot of the investors in the real estate want to maintain confidentiality.
Okay.
And because when they put their name out there, they're immediately besieged by all kinds of other projects and deals.
Sure.
That guy's got money.
It's like the lottery winner, right?
And that's it. And a lot of the guys who do the successful investing actually want to stay below the radar.
Sure.
Okay. The other thing is when the deals are in progress, Charlie Ackerman went with Mayor Reed to England in 2010. I went with Mayor Reed to China this March, okay? The vast majority of what we did, which, by the way, there was some extraordinary opportunity there that we're bringing to Atlanta. It might take a year, 15 months, 2 years to close those deals.
Sure.
And the fastest way to ruin those deals is to start talking about them out loud and having everybody start hitting on how can I get a piece of that pie.
Right.
And by the way, people are not excluded. It's as simple as getting involved with the World Trade Center Atlanta, get involved with the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, get to know the people at the Georgia Economic Development Office. You know, Stella Zhu is in charge of China. She's a good friend of mine. And it's not like you get special favor. If you just get involved, there's opportunity. Again, relationship. It's what the world goes on. And if you get involved and you have expertise to bring to the dance, you can do it.
Okay? Sure, sure.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, and probably brought up a couple more. But
sure.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think the anonymity probably does keep things moving along a little bit better.
It's a necessary evil.
But do you think there's a, you know, when you talk about international investment in Atlanta and in Georgia, I guess, on the whole, is it something that you think the average Georgian even realizes going on?
Probably not the guy in the street, but the guy in the street's absolutely the benefactor.
Yeah.
I always use British as the example. I love those folks, been hanging around with them since I'm kids. I don't remember how many businesses it is right here in Atlanta that are British owned, but I know they employ over 30,000 people.
Okay? Yeah, I think people would have no idea.
Yeah, if you put a little international flag on top of all the buildings and businesses around Atlanta, you'd be amazed how many of them were not our red, white, and blue.
Yeah, now do you remember
right.
back...
It would look like the International Airport Terminal with which all is, those different
which
flags.
Because is how
really
it should
is.
Be, right? I mean, that's what America's all about. But I think it's... Remember a couple years back when... I say a couple years. I'm aging myself right now, but I don't know, 10, 15, more, maybe more years ago when there was like this big panic that like Japan was taking over America because there were Japanese products everywhere. Really? I mean...
Well, and you have the same panic now with China.
Sure.
You actually have it creeping up from Brazil and all. And, you know, we don't want to support ignorance, okay? Our success...
That's a great quote. I'm gonna write that down.
Our success and our thriving economy, although it may seem a little off now, the difference between a good economy and a bad economy is usually on about 10%.
Yeah.
So most of it is humming along the way it should. I know a lot of people are having a hard time. I'm not trying to make light of that. But there's an impression that all our jobs and all our money are going to China. If you and I do a lot with China. If you actually look at the statistics, it's less than 3% of the jobs have gone to China. And in that, I think it's 2.6%. Of that 2.6%, 0.7% is value added in America, which means the part that's gone to China is actually less than 2%.
Mm-hmm.
Now look at it a different way. Some of the jobs that people don't want to do here or don't want to do for the world pay scale. And see, I live in a world of reality. If I can buy it for a dollar or I can buy it for $2, I'm going to buy it for a dollar if it's the same thing. Everybody else thinks the same way, regardless of what's fashionable. So some of the manufacturing is going to move away. We're still the best market in the world. So the manufacturing may be offshore. And by the way, this is one of the things that Ackerman and I do very well with the Chinese, Brazil, the Europeans, et cetera. That little manufacturing operation may go offshore, okay? They need a place to do their business over there. We have the relationships with the Chinese governments, because in China everything's government-related, to get them the right facility and government incentives over there to manufacture there. That keeps that United States business competitive and profitable on a global scale. And we are now working, especially in Atlanta, on a global scale, not a Georgia scale or Southeastern scale. Those products don't just get sold in China, obviously. They're coming back to the United States. I'm working on a very large distribution center right now in Las Vegas for a Chinese company that's based in Georgia. I wish I could have brought it to Georgia, but the second one will be here. And then... they need headquarters in the different regions of the country, and then they need sales offices in the different regions of the country.
Right.
When we took that company international, because I have to admit, I was the one who brought them to China, then I brought them from China back here, but when we brought them back here, we brought them to Rio de Janeiro, we brought them to Gdansk in Poland, we brought them to London, and we brought them to Toronto. And the people who are United States people working offshore still pay United States taxes. Now, it's not a full job the way they equate it, but if I did six of them, it's probably three equivalents. The alternative for that company was to close its doors completely because they could not stay competitive here. So the trick is to make lemonade out of lemons, and I make pretty good lemonade.
Can you put some vodka in there?
Yeah.
Just checking.
Well, Rick, how do you shift back and forth between Southern business and international business? Because like you're saying, I mean, everything is global and everything is local. So you kind of have to go back and forth between the two.
Well, as you can tell by my voice, I was actually raised in Jersey up north. So the original question was, how do I shift from New York and Jersey, you know, down here to good old, you know, the South? And this Georgia was a very genteel Southern town when I moved here over 30 years ago. People are the same everywhere. And I learned this when I worked in Africa. I was with the British, but the Germans worked with us. We worked with the Pakistanis. I worked for a British company for about a year. I was actually in Tehran, Iran. Now, this is when the Shah was there. I gave away my age. But you learn to engage the people. It's all about culture, okay? Now, you have to be a competent engineer. You have to be competent at real estate. And whatever your business is, you folks are competent at, you know, the broadcasting. But it's all about people, and people are the same. They want to feel they're of value. They want to feel they have something to contribute. And by the way, they are valuable, and they do have something to contribute. When you recognize that, and you also realize that it's very important to them to have the tea ceremony before you get into talking about business, you know, like as we do in China, or other things in other places we go, it's the same as saying please and thank you. It's just a little bit more ceremonial some places you go. Part of the respect.
Can I ask a question about that before you go on? Because I find that stuff fascinating. I know Elizabeth is about to take off on a whirlwind international tour. Well, she's going to Singapore.
Where are you going?
Whatever. Okay. Sounded good to say a whirlwind tour. But yeah, she's going to Singapore for a couple of weeks. She's leaving me. But we were talking about some of the potential cultural things. And I know there are a lot of people, I think, who are intimidated by, not Elizabeth, of course, because she is awesome. But, you know, I think there's a lot of people who are intimidated, perhaps, to go do business in another country because they are afraid that they will misstep. Do you find that people in other countries are willing to kind of show you the way, or are they expecting you to know ahead of time when you get there?
I would say be very careful of being typically American. And I already know you to be so gracious, this wouldn't be a problem for you personally. So. But Americans move at a very fast pace, and they want instant service. And it's not just Singapore or Asia or China, you know, where my recent experience is. That's actually Europe and all around the world. They don't move as quickly as we do, and they is almost everybody, okay? And then as far as them being accepting, if you smile, if you ask for a little bit of help, especially if you learn the little phrase of, I don't speak your language very well, can you help me, and you say it in their language, you're usually going to be welcomed with open arms as long as you continue in that vein. You know, if you say, can I get a little help, but I need this right now, you know, you're going to cut yourself off. But if you go there and you say, I'm so happy to visit your country, it's such a beautiful place, I want to be a good ambassador for the United States, and to do so, I'm afraid I don't know a lot about your culture. Can you help me learn about your culture? Now, if you take that, if you notice I didn't put a country in there, and you say that almost any place on earth, they're going to welcome you with open arms. If you plan 8 hours to get done when you would get done in about 4 hours in the United States, not because those people are slow, it's because you're the one who's slow in understanding how things are done there. Americans are used to being the top of the heap and the world revolves around us. You know, the joke I always have is when friends come with me to China and they go, this place is crazy. It's full of foreigners. And they don't realize that they are the foreigner when they go to China. And, you know, and you have to adjust. So.
Yeah, interesting.
So you've mentioned working with the city and the state economic development offices as far as developing some of these opportunities. And it all sounds really exciting, like there's a lot of growth on the horizon. Talk a little bit about how you've coordinated with economic development and what's coming next.
Well, I've grown small businesses into large businesses myself, and we've done that for my customers in the engineering company. We were one of those companies that helped your business grow. And we did that very, very well by adapting over the time. Ackerman did the same thing. Sometimes they were in the retail business, sometimes in the office business, sometimes, you know, land for development. They always did it all, but they would go where the market is strong. They do a lot of medical space, dental space, doctor's offices, hospital support. Right now, that's where the opportunity and money is. And, of course, international is where I am. Of course, Ackerman and I are just wonderful, okay? But that's not my point.
Of course.
That's not my point. the reason we were able to do that is actually the vision on the part of the Atlanta government and the state of Georgia, and how they were able to bring in federal assistance to a lot of these things. Atlanta has, contrary to the T-Splost and a lot of things you hear now, I just came from New York. You think we got traffic problems, people don't know. But we have an extraordinary highway system, and we have an extraordinary rail system, okay? Mm-hmm. That didn't happen last year. 50 years ago, end of World War II, Eisenhower era, the people in Georgia were smart enough to get a more than our piece of the pie and develop those road systems, and they've kept up with them pretty much ever since. We have the Port of the Savannah and the Port of Brunswick. Savannah is the fourth largest port in the United States, but when you couple it with Brunswick, I think the throughput is second, okay? Why is that important? And now they're going to deepen Savannah to take advantage of the widening of the Panama Canal. Guy in the street doesn't understand that, okay? And then we have the busiest airport in the world, okay? Now, to me, that means we have the most user-friendly airport in the world because people don't go in bottlenecks, okay? Let me bring that down to a level that the guy in the street can understand. The ships, when they come across the ocean, okay, and they line up outside of Savannah, this is actually 50, 80 miles out. From the time the thing is on the ship to the time the thing is on the shelf up in Kentucky is half the time of any other port in the United States.
Wow.
Now, if you're an international business, that's an extraordinary statistic.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't include if it gets hung up at customs. I mean, you can't control that if it's an exotic product. But if it's a straightforward thing, it moves literally very quickly. Busiest airport in the world. I travel a lot. You tell me I got to go to the busiest airport in the world, I want to put a sharp stick in my eye. Okay. And I live in Atlanta. But if you're an international business and you're looking for where you want to put a headquarters or you want to put a sales office, you can wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning in Atlanta, go down to the airport, get on a plane, take a meeting with 78% of the businesses in North America, and be home that night. Can't do that with this rich a market anywhere else in the world.
Right.
Okay. If you want to include all of the Western Hemisphere, you add one day to that. If you're going to do that anywhere else in the world in a rich market, that is a 2-day to 3-day process. Okay. So the foreign businessman elsewhere has to travel 3 days to accomplish the same thing. But to the people who own the foreign companies, that means they need half the salesmen if they locate in Atlanta. That's dollars
sold.
And cents on the shelf. And that's it.
It's a lot of powerful competitive advantages when you look at logistics and what it takes to move product.
Absolutely. And Mayor Reed, Governor Deal, have done an extraordinary job of promoting this internationally. Mayor Reed has traveled far beyond Atlanta city limits. He's taken a lot of criticism for it, unfortunately unjustified. He has the vision to look past the city limits in his travel and also in the benefit. Somebody moves to Sandy Springs, they're still going to spend money and do business in Atlanta. And so he is actually promoting a Georgia approach, including Savannah, and Governor Deal has taken an approach that goes beyond Georgia's borders. That same thinking has been down in the capitals in our area for 50 years, and that's why Atlanta has grown sixfold in the time I've been here.
So we're talking a lot about today about this having a big vision for where Atlanta can sit in the global economy and where Georgia really fits in terms of the world. You have seen a lot of the world, Rick, so tell us what you see as coming on the horizon and what are the projects that you're working on in terms of the international and brokerage development now.
Atlanta is the next international city of this hemisphere. New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, the other big cities, they're clogged already. Atlanta has no natural barriers. Atlanta has a very young, very educated workforce, very willing workforce. Now, the international community's always been here, but now it's bubbled above the surface because our local economy stalled a little bit. Our economy will come back, but see, the smart people have shifted to supporting the international community, so both will grow together. A lot of the international growth here to date has been in spite of some of the thinking on the, we want to stay a small Georgia town. Specific projects I'm working with, Eva Galumbos, mayor of Sandy Springs, was visionary a few years ago, and she created a sister city relationship with Taichung in China. Taichung is very similar to Sandy Springs. It's a very affluent area just north of Shanghai. There's not a lot of stuff in Taichung, although there are some good things, just as UPS and Newell Rubbermaid are in Sandy Springs. But both are excellent places to live. You know, it's a very upscale, comfortable community. There's been educational missions back and forth. The governments have gone back and forth. But this December, I'm, on behalf of Mayor Galambos, I'm leading the first business trade mission at Taichung, where businessmen can go there. We're making excellent one-on-one connections. And by the way, everybody's invited to join this. You don't have to live in Sandy Springs. And if you're not interested in international trade, there's planning meetings here. We need sponsors. It's going out to tens of thousands of affluent businessmen, you know, the reports on it, et cetera. So there's a local opportunity for the little guys in the Sandy Springs Chamber or Metro Chamber, and there's the big opportunity. When we do that trade mission, we're making these excellent one-on-one connections. If you sell left-handed smoke shifters, I've got a counterpart in Taichung in the Department of Economic Development who's going to look for the guy who wants to manufacture and sell left-handed smoke shifters, and we're going to get you connected to do business.
What the heck is a left-handed smoke shifter?
Well, you know, that's for another topic when we're on technical things. So.
Is that like a... Never mind.
A lot of people confuse it with a right-handed Rackefatz or a lower-level Weibelfetzer, but it's not really the same thing.
I thought it might be kind of like an ambidextrous Dugelmeister, but I wasn't sure.
No. But see, you can tell by the color on the belly side that it wouldn't be that. So.
Perfect. Okay. I'm clear now.
I'm glad somebody is.
Other things.
What is going on in this studio?
Are the things going on? Ackerman's proud. We just had an intern start with economic development in Rio de Janeiro. China and Asia is happening right now. China is actually cresting its first tier, going into its secondary economy, and we're very happy to be in the middle of that. Of course, we constantly work with Europe. We work with South Africa, the people who have traditionally done business here, Australia. The next horizon is South America, in particular Brazil. We have an intern starting there. The Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, in conjunction with the World Trade Center, has a mission going there in November that, again, almost anybody can get involved with. I think there's a planning meeting in October. And by the way, don't let me forget to give you a couple of Lilia's upcoming events from World Trade Center before we're done. But then the mayor is actually going to Brazil. It was supposed to be this year. I believe it's been postponed till next year. Those are things I am involved in personally. And then the other thing is most people don't realize, you know, they see somebody on the street who's a foreigner and they think that it's an isolated case. There are 63 consul general or honorary consul general in Atlanta, and I think there's 32 bilateral chambers of commerce, not including the World Trade Center or like Sandy Springs Global Gateway, you know, committee and all. And that grouping I just mentioned doesn't include the China Business Association of Atlanta. You think they're an important one? You know, I mean, so, getting involved in that community, one of the challenges I have is I have great interns and I've got great support at Ackerman, but there's only one of me. It could be a full-time job for an army, but that's where it takes a community.
I'm not sure the world could handle more than one of you.
This has been said before.
I'm just putting it out there. Just being honest.
So before we get to the World Trade Center stuff, I have to ask you one more question, Rick. You wear custom silk vests and suits from China every day, and you've mentioned you've got a long history with the Brits, and you were also involved in the royal wedding celebration here. Ackerman had an intern at the London Olympics, and you helped with the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. So you're winning over all of our
and I love that. I always,
Anglophile.
I always say I wish we were on video when we have stuff like this come up. And we are right now because we have the intern in here videotaping, but Rick is wearing a very snazzy red vest right now.
So how does your everyday man-on-the-street clientele feel about your personal trappings and driving a Rolls Royce?
What?
Yeah.
Well, he said that all humbly, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And let me offer that I was not born with a silver spoon. I've earned what I had up through the ranks, as everybody should do. I got a lot of helping hands along the way. I like to collect cars. I also like to get under the hood of them and get greasy, which is one of the reasons I can play with these things. My clients love them, okay? I have a lot of fun with them. The international travel, it's kind of common knowledge that you can get a suit made in Hong Kong overnight for $100. That's not exactly true, but you can get nice clothes made there for a lot less money than here. It's one of the fringe benefits. By the way, this is after the $5,000 round trip. You know,
right.
You could just save this.
Right. Let's assume you're going to go there for some other reason and then have a suit made while you're there.
For you gals, the next time I come back, the black pearls and the white pearls and
the
jade.
Oh, okay. You'll let us know when you're going.
For next time, or the silk robes.
Trade mission.
But yeah, I have a flashy persona. It's just part of who I am, and I have a lot of fun with it, okay? But as far as, you know, looking affluent when you try to do what we do, a lot of people think real estate agents are just, you know, picking their pocket. And I hate to say a lot of real estate agents bring that on themselves. They try to do projects where they don't have the proper expertise. Ackerman's been here for 50 years. I've been here for 35 years of that. We've worked in commercial real estate. We've worked with the international community. We've worked with industry, blah, blah, blah. I'll bore you to tears with it and all. There's depth at the bench, and the other difference at Ackerman is if I get involved in the project, it's not that lone wolf I'm going to keep my commission. If it involves retail and it's not my expertise, I have an expert down the hall. If it involves injection molding of plastics, I have an expert down the hall. If it involves manufacturing of heavy thing, we just brought a car plant here, you know, a few years ago. If it involves something like that, we'll go outside the company and we will get that correct expertise and bring them and close the deal. And a lot of that's available, again, through the economic development offices. At the end of the day, driving the Rolls Royce, I'll say it a different way. If you're doing these kinds of transactions internationally, do you want to work with somebody who's getting by in their 15-year-old whatever, or do you want to work with somebody who's very good at it and successful? Okay, and our experience is I'm going to do that kind of transaction. I want them to know the government. I want them to know the regulations. I want them to understand transportation because I can save you a dollar on square footage on your warehouse by putting it on this side of town versus that side of town. But what Ackerman knows is if I put it on that side of town and save you that dollar a square foot, you're going to have $3 a day more in transportation cost per pallet, and it's actually going to cost you more money in your business. And you won't last here. We want you to be like the damn Yankees, not the Yankees. You know the difference?
No, what's the difference?
The Yankees came down and went back, okay? The damn Yankees came down and stayed, okay?
And all this room is full of damn Yankees.
Here we
love it.
When we bring you to Atlanta in business, we want you to be the damn Yankees.
I love it.
A lot of great resources and information. And if people want assistance with their real estate needs or information on international opportunity, the Sandy Strings mission, and all the stuff that you talked about. Rick, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, it's the cell phone or the email. The cell phone is 770-331-9324. Actually reaches me around the world, as I find out very regularly. My email is just my name at ackermanco.net. So it's RWORONIECKI at ackermanco.net. Just like it sounds. So,
yeah. Say that three times fast.
Yeah, I had to when I was young.
So. I'll bet.
The other thing I'd be remiss if I didn't point out is Lilia Postolacci is the director of the World Trade Center, and she's actually my benefactor in bringing you here to you today. The World Trade Center is the center of activity for international trade in Atlanta, and if you want to do business worldwide. It's relatively inexpensive to join. They have 300 affiliate members worldwide, and like when I travel to a place where I don't have an office or I don't know somebody, I can stay in a facility like you can't believe and take meetings, you know, at very little cost or no cost because I'm a member here in Atlanta. They have a couple of great upcoming events. October 4th is the Governor's Awards, which centers around international trade. If you want to find out who the movers and shakers are and get involved, a few bucks to attend that dinner, and it's fantastic. October 24th, Import-Export Compliance Paperwork Seminar. Boy, there's an exciting one, but it's something you need to know. And on November 8th, it's actually the 30th anniversary of the World Trade Center in Atlanta. Most people, I don't think, realize they've been here 5 years and they're actually on their 30th year.
Yeah, that is. I think we talked about that when Lilia was here. It is kind of amazing. So can I borrow the Rolls?
You can use the Rolls any weekend you want if you pay the maintenance for that month.
Oh, damn it. I knew there was a catch.
There's always a catch.
Always.
Rick, it's been awesome getting to know you. And thanks so much for coming in and sharing so much great information with us. It was really fun. You'll have to come back sometime.
I appreciate it.
I do, before we wrap up, because I do have to talk about one news story. And I'm going to talk about the least important news story because I'm just going to talk about the one that bugged me. Do you mind?
Go.
Okay. So we were talking about childhood hunger, a very important topic, very important issue. And what caught my eye this morning, you can join this conversation, Rick. There's room for everybody. There was a story in the Business Chronicle this morning about people, you know, school is starting back up again, the colleges, Georgia State, Georgia University, or University of Georgia, et cetera, et cetera. And I just came back from a weekend of getting my daughter situated for her junior year at Boston University. And
I can't believe you have a daughter college age.
I love you. I knew we were pals. We're back to being friends again. It's all good. Anyway, yeah, so I was doing all that, and I, you know, I had to spend a few bucks getting her situated and whatever. But anyway, there's a story in the Business Chronicle this morning about people hiring decorators to decorate their daughters, primarily, though I think their children is the way the story is written, dorm rooms. And I wanted to, you talked about having a sharp stick to poke yourself in the eye. I wanted to poke all those moms in the eye with that same sharp stick. Because really, are you kidding me? There are people that don't have food to eat. There are kids that are starving, and you're spending money on a decorator to decorate a room that your child is going to have for 10 months. You're kidding. I mean, it kills me. And I do remember that I'm on a rampage. I'm sorry. I got the soapbox out and I'm on it now. But I do remember some of my daughter's friends freshman year who went locally and I guess saved money on tuition and whatnot because they were going in state and getting Hope scholarships and all that business, spending some money on decorating. And I was like, you're going out of state private. We're not doing any of that. P.S. You don't need it. It's ridiculous. P.S. I didn't have that when I was growing up. And I walked...
Elizabeth, I'll let you go first because Dana is not going to like my alternative point of view.
All right, go ahead.
No, I want to hear Rick.
I do too, Rick, please.
I'm not sure I have that much of a point of view.
I think, and I've done this a lot in my career, to work a lot, and I worked a lot with my university, and one of the reasons I use interns is to help the young people come forward and grow, okay? But they have to work for it, okay?
Yeah.
We don't hand it to them.
Right.
I don't think there's a problem with the trappings of success, all right? There are some times when it's a little extreme and you don't want to be slapping people in the face with it, especially in hard economic times like this.
Okay? Right.
I try to be very careful about that. But too much we move to a society where everybody is supposed to be helping everybody else. I like the kind of society where, and it's a lot of what I do for a living, we create economic opportunity, jobs, growth, things of that nature. We do it all in the private sector.
Okay? You know, I'm glad you brought that up.
If somebody earns that money and they want to spend it on a pink tutu upside down on top of the Peachtree Plaza, God bless them. When they want to do it with my money, not no, but hell no.
I hear you.
So if the moms want to decorate the kids' rooms and they've earned the money, God bless them.
I hear you, but I can't totally agree because, you know, there is – I agree with you. Listen, I'm all about the trappings of success. I like nice clothes. I like to spend money on myself, on makeup, on my condo, whatever. But when you're doing that for your kids without teaching them the value of that dollar, they are going into society feeling entitled. They didn't work for that. They didn't do anything for that. And now they're getting their little matching whatever the heck in their dorm room. It's ridiculous. Like, let them learn how to rough it a little bit.
Now,
that's all I'm saying.
I agree with that. But again, I'll say it a different way. When my kids were coming up and they had advantages I never had. I didn't have two nickels to rub together when I was a kid. And I had disadvantages and I did okay. So then imagine what happens if you have advantages. But the whole time they were coming up, they had to earn their allowance when they were very young. Then they had to get a part-time job, even though we didn't need the money.
Right.
It's a learn to value. I have given them some seemingly extravagant things, but they have always known where it come from, how daddy had to work for it, or what we did,
sure,
or whatever, and they had respect for it.
Sure.
I agree with you 1,000% when it's handed on a silver platter, they don't know where it came from, and the kid or the person on the receiving end thinks they're special because somebody else earned money and gave it to them, which is why I don't believe in anything in a giveaway. I believe work for whatever you get. It teaches respect and appreciation for what you've got.
You know, it could just be, look, there's all kinds of perspectives on it. And I know there's a lot of people who do it who would say, you know what, we worked hard for this money. You know, the dad and I worked hard, whatever. We want to give this to our children. We have every right to do so. And they absolutely have the right to do so. I have the right to criticize them.
But kids better be getting straight A's.
Well, the thing is, like I said to my child, Amen. You can go to college anywhere you want to go to college. And I will live in a cardboard box to pay for that if I need to, because I want you to have the best academic opportunities you can have. I didn't say you can go anywhere you want and have the prettiest, most expensive dorm room, because I'm not going to live in a cardboard box for that. However, I also think that part of this, and this is my experience as a parent, I met some of those girls who had those fancy dorm rooms while I knew them as they were growing up through middle school and high school, and they were obnoxious to their parents. They were not respectful. My daughter's very respectful, and she lives in a dump. Just saying. There's no correlation. Maybe there's a correlation. I don't know.
Well, if she learns the right work ethic, which I suspect she will from such a great mom, okay, and she does her studies well, and Elizabeth hit the nail on the head. My kids got some advantages. Their job was to get straight A's, be stars at basketball,
absolutely,
be stars at the dance, those different things kids do when they're in school.
Absolutely.
They were at the top of their game. Whatever I could do for them, I did. I never lived in a cardboard box, by the way, when they did it. They shared in what we were doing at the time.
Right.
And by the way, when they didn't get the grades and whatever, it got cut off like a switch.
Yeah.
It was not, we're going to see what happens next month. It's like, okay, let's take the car away this month, and if your grades come up, we'll give you the keys again next month.
Yeah, yeah. So. All right. I think my soapbox has been fully exhausted. I feel better now. Thank you for indulging me, everyone, especially you, Elizabeth.
Absolutely. I think that wraps it up for us. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Rick, it was great to have you, and looking forward to hearing more about Georgia Forward. Thanks to our partners and sponsors, the World Trade Center Atlanta and Lilia Pascialetti. Thanks so much for setting up this this interview. And to Ackerman as well. Thanks to them. Visit the World Trade Center Atlanta at WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett. And you've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. And be sure to stay tuned for Southern Hospitality coming up next right here on Business Radio X.